Our next case is 14-104, State of Ohio versus Terrence Brown. For the appellant, we have Mr. Dobson.
Your Honor, thank you. Chief Justice, I'd like to share 5 minutes of time with Mr. Cushing from the Ohio Attorney General's office. Additionally, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if possible. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Paul Dobson and I'm the Wood County Prosecuting Attorney. This case is about raising a statutory violation to a constitutional violation with a dangerous result. By extending the reach of the Ohio Constitution's Article 1, Section 14, beyond the confines of the nearly identical Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution, the Sixth District Court of Appeals introduced a tremor of constitutional uncertainty into an otherwise bright-line rule. In doing so, the Sixth District usurped the authority of this court as the sole arbiter and protector of the Ohio Constitution. It also ignored this court's consistent message that that Article 1, Section 14 must be harmonized with the Fourth Amendment.
Well, counsel, constitutional issues don't just originate here. They sometimes start at the trial court level and work their way up. So why would we regard an interpretation of the Ohio Constitution by the Sixth District as an attempt to usurp our authority?
Well, because
I mean, isn't that just the natural process of things? We may or may not agree with how they interpret it, but it seems to me that's a very unfair categorization of what a Court of Appeals is attempting to do.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor. However, in this situation, this court has addressed the issue of Article 1, Section 14, and the Fourth Amendment on any number of occasions.
Well, I think, I don't know, was in your brief, somewhere they're comparing Robinette. This court has, from time to time, in specific situations, found greater protection in the Ohio Constitution than in the United States Constitution. In fact, no less a scholar than Jeff Sutton has advocated that litigants should look first to the Ohio Constitution before they look to the United States Constitution.
Yes, sir. And when you look at the Ohio Constitution, its wording almost exactly tracks the language of the United States Constitution. And
but
what this court
haven't we been pretty fussy about limiting officers to performing their duties within their jurisdiction?
I think that the Ohio legislature has been fussy about doing that and has created statutory limitations, but they're statutory limitations. In fact, this court has stated in cases like Jones and Jordan, the 2009 Jones, that the limits or the standards imposed under cases like Atwater and Virginia v. Moore should be applied as well to the Ohio Constitution's parameters. And in those situations, it becomes problematic when you begin extending the length of a statute into a constitutional violation. And I think that problem was specifically.
You say that what I'm hearing you saying is that it was a statutory violation, and you can't take a look at that and say that violation precipitated a constitutional violation.
No, Your Honor, I'm not trying to say that, because that's what the court stated in State versus Brown. However, what the court looked at in State versus Brown is that they took the balancing test and basically used the statute as a fulcrum and said, does the statute itself provide an adequate balance between the state's interests in protecting the public and the individual's interests in privacy?
What are you suggesting would be a remedy for a police officer stopping motorists without jurisdiction in violation of this statute, when you had a township police officer enforcing traffic laws on the state highway without any jurisdiction?
Your Honor, whatever that remedy would be a constitutional remedy, and would be a statutory remedy and not a constitutional.
But what is it?
I wouldn't have that answer, Your Honor. I can't speculate on what the legislature may determine is an appropriate
Is there any deterrent benefit to not looking at it as a constitutional benefit?
I'm sorry, is there any what, Your Honor?
What deterrence would there be if we don't look at it as a constitutional violation?
Your Honor, it's the same deterrence factor that this court has found before, that the limitation is based on the Fourth Amendment. Just because this court has indicated to the state legislature in cases like this, referring to jurisdictional statutes, has stated that the legislature may want to take a look at this and create a penalty, and the state legislature has not done so.
Sixth District looks at this and says this is an unreasonable search conducted by an officer without jurisdiction and violates the Ohio Constitution. What's wrong with that position?
Because what it begins to do is it creates constitutional uncertainty for the police officer on the street.
Well, wait a minute. The remedy is stay within your jurisdiction.
Well, then, Your Honor, what you're going to need to do then is overturn your previous case law regarding extra-jurisdictional stops, and you're going to have to ignore completely then the United States Supreme Court.
Well, weren't those extra-jurisdictional stops in a pursuit situation where it originated within the jurisdiction and then, ended up in another jurisdiction?
Your Honor, the court decided that quite some time ago. However, State versus Wiedemann is not a case where a pursuit began inside the jurisdiction. In fact, the officer was outside of his jurisdiction when he first noticed any kind of violations. He was outside of his physical jurisdiction. State versus Jones, the officer was outside of his physical jurisdiction when he identified that the vehicle was driving down the road without its lights on. In this case, the officer was actually within her physical jurisdiction. Now, it's been conceded, and I don't deny the fact that she pulled that vehicle over for a violation of a statute that is specifically enumerated in 4513.39A as her not having the authority to do so. But she was within her physical jurisdiction. This court has indicated on more than one occasion then that an officer outside of his jurisdiction can make a stop.
Under what circumstances?
Well, in State versus Wiedemann, the officer observed some traffic violations and believed that the vehicle was a danger, and so pulled that vehicle over. That vehicle had not done any damage. That vehicle had gone across the fog line and over the other.
But counsel, isn't the common thread that goes through those cases when you're outside your jurisdiction, indeed you may have the ability to make the stop, but not the arrest or the search, that you must be accompanied by someone who has jurisdiction?
Your Honor, if you read State versus Hulbert, and the definition of powers of arrest, then actually issuing the citation is something that is outside the jurisdiction.
So could this Toledo Township officer make a stop and an arrest in Ashtabula County? Stop, arrest, and search in Ashtabula County?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe
across
that they
could. Across the state.
Well, I believe that it would violate the law, but it would not be a constitutional violation as this court has defined it in the United States Supreme Court.
So it all comes back to whether we want to look at Ohio's Constitution as giving more protection than the federal Constitution.
Well, frankly, Your Honor, I think it comes back to whether you want to put more exceptions and balancing tests into the bright line rule, which I believe it causes hesitation by officers, and when you cause hesitation by police officers, dangerous things result. And frankly, maybe you might even recall, Your Honor, the Peter Sawicki case, when the Ottawa Hills Police Department kind of put their toes on the edge of their jurisdictional line, and Peter Sawicki was killed by Anthony Cook. When you put these kind of tests, as opposed to the bright line standard, which is exactly why the United States Supreme Court established a bright line standard, when you start carving into that and say, okay, well, this doesn't qualify and this doesn't qualify, you start creating hesitation by police officers.
We're not creating anything. Isn't this a matter of what the General Assembly has said the limitation on the power of a township officer is?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Why shouldn't we follow what the law is?
I'm sorry?
Why shouldn't we follow what the General Assembly announces that the law says?
You should follow that, Your Honor, and the General
then
Assembly has said.
Then we have a police officer, if I understand you correctly, who is acting outside of her jurisdiction as denominated by the General Assembly.
Well, Your Honor.
Is that right or wrong?
She pulled that vehicle over for a violation that is enumerated in that
statute.
How did
she happen to be up on the highway in the first place?
She was on the interstate in a median watching traffic, which under the statute she's allowed to be. She has authority over certain offenses like DUI, like failure to pay obey traffic control devices. What the state legislature did is carve out and granted any number of offenses, a large portion of the traffic offenses, but they did carve out some offenses that she can stop for and other offenses that she can't stop for. And that's the difficulty in raising this to a constitutional violation.
Suggest that we're doing something here. We're not doing anything. We're going to try to apply what the General Assembly says the law is. It seems to me like you ought to be over there telling them to change this and give township authorities more responsibility or a broader jurisdiction to arrest more violators.
And this court has indicated to the General Assembly that they should consider establishing a statutory penalty.
What result are you seeking from this court in this case, Mr. Dobson?
Your Honor,
if you won, what would it look like?
I think that it would say that relative to Ohio Revised Code Section 4513.39, the protections of Article 1, Section 14 and of the Ohio Constitution and the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution are co-equal, and therefore the statute does not amount to a violation of either the state or the United States Constitution.
Well, now that's for us to decide, isn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you had asked me.
Yeah. You want us to say that a violation of that statute doesn't rise to a constitutional violation under the Ohio Constitution?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what authority would we use? You don't think Robinette is a basis for us to move in that direction or not?
I think Robinette, but I think that State versus Jones, as well as the dissent in State versus Brown, which says what happens when the Ohio legislature, if the Ohio legislature repeals this statute, does that mean that the Ohio legislature
has... So you want us to take a look at Jones, Robinette, Wiedemann, and see which of those cases should be the law going forward for this kind of a situation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you think that State versus Jones overruled State versus Brown?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe that State versus Jones overruled State versus
Brown.
And
are you asking us to overrule State versus Brown? You just want us to rely on State versus Jones.
I don't believe that it's necessary to overrule State versus Brown. While I don't necessarily agree with the decision in that case, I don't believe that it's necessary to overrule State versus Brown in order to find for the state in this case, Your Honor.
Counsel, to go back and read all of the
the last version of Robinette, but my recollection is we first decided, said it's a constitutional violation. The mistake we made is we didn't tie it enough to the Ohio Constitution, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, well, you're trying to tell us what the Fourth Amendment means to the whole country, which we really didn't intend. The case came back, and we looked at it again and still ended up with the same outcome, did we not?
Yes, you did.
Using the Ohio Constitution.
Yes, you did.
So how does that help your case? Because in that case, under the Ohio Constitution, there was a greater protection to the defendant there than there was under the federal Constitution.
Well, in Robinette, the court did state that the Ohio Constitution, Article 1, Section 14 of the Ohio Constitution and the Fourth Amendment should be harmonized unless there are persuasive reasons to find otherwise.
Well, unless there are persuasive reasons to find otherwise is why we're here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because there may very well be reasons because, you know, if you look at paragraph 20 of the opinion, the appellate opinion, it is undisputed that the township officer violated 45-13-39 by making the extraterritorial stop on an interstate highway for a marked lane violation, which is specified in 45-13-39A as being within the exclusive jurisdiction of the highway patrol, the sheriffs, or the sheriff deputies. You agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Further, no extenuating circumstances were present to justify an extraterritorial stop by the township police officer for this type of violation.
Yes, Your Honor.
You agree with that? Therefore, we find the extraterritorial stop was unreasonable under the Ohio Constitution. That's the trigger for the extenuating circumstances or the rationale for shifting from the U.S. Constitution to the Ohio Constitution.
And therefore, it would be the Ohio Supreme Court's decision that in a moment when a police officer is trying to determine whether he should act or not, he should take a balancing test and determine whether his reasons for acting at that moment, that when lives may be at stake, that he should stop, do a balancing test, and determine whether the interests of the state are more superior to the privacy rights of that individual. And I think that that's a hesitation that's deadly.
Okay, it was clearly the violation of 45-13-39, the officer was familiar with, I would think.
There's nothing in the record to indicate that she specifically was, but I think that it would be absolutely without reason to believe that she didn't know the limitations of 45-13.
She didn't or did?
I believe that she probably did. She also probably understood the Sixth District's opinions in its own State versus Jones and State versus Caldwell, where they upheld the exact same kind of stops under both the United States Constitution and the Ohio Constitution.
Okay. So you're attributing her knowledge of appellate decisions to be her guide here.
Well, Your Honor, if yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel? Mr. Gold.
No, Mr. Cushing.
Cushing wanted to argue.
Madam
Chair. I'm sorry. We had a split here with Cushing. Actually, you've used all your time. All right, I'll give you a minute. I'm sorry.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Matthew Cushing on behalf of the Attorney General. I'd just like to address a number of this court's questions that were directed to my friend. First, there is no remedy in the statute. There's no statutory remedy. This court recognized in Jones that it is the province of the General Assembly to choose whether to apply a remedy for a violation of a state statute or not. Second, I would note that if you look at the statute itself that was violated here, it doesn't appear to protect an individual's liberty interests like the statute in Brown did. It's more about sharing of police resources, whether the state highway patrol or local township officers are going to be able to pull over for enumerated offenses in 4513.39. I would also note...
I don't know the history of this particular one, but there'd been an ongoing brouhaha over in the General Assembly. Is this a result of this particular statute, a result of that over up in Cleveland, an area where community was notorious for setting out on 71 and ticketing everyone. Is that how the statute got to be the way it is?
This statute's been around much longer than that particular factual circumstance, Your Honor, but the General Assembly has demonstrated in a number of other statutes, even in investigatory statutes, that it knows how to create a remedy.
So this is a two-step issue. The Constitution, federal or state, is not self-executing, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
The constitutional protections come about through courts determining how the Constitution is to be implemented.
Certainly.
And the execution of this Constitution normally flows through a statute, right?
Yes, it does in terms of creation of private rights of action and all of that, but this court recognized in Jones...
So now we have a Constitution that's not self-executing, and we have a statute that's not self-executing, and we're in the Supreme Court of Ohio, and everybody's throwing their hands in the air saying, well, what's to be done? And your answer is nothing.
That's right? Not necessarily true. In this particular case where
well,
the general...
Well, that was Justice O'Donnell's question. It seems to me it's a pretty good one. What's to be done?
For a violation of this particular statute, there's no private right of action.
So nothing is the answer.
That is correct in terms of in this court, but the General Assembly can change that. They can modify the statute to create a remedy. And I also note that this is against the backdrop of Jones, where this court recognized that the court should not constitutionalize mere violations of state statutes because, as the United States Supreme Court recognized in Virginia v. Moore, in both Justice Scalia's majority opinion and in Justice Ginsburg's concurrence, that if you constitutionalize violations of state statutes, you disincentivize the legislature from creating any protections beyond the bounds of the Constitution.
Well, they can create a protection by creating a remedy.
But if this court finds...
If they don't have a remedy, you've got no place to look but the Constitution.
Well, I think 2 points, Your Honor. One, if this court were to raise the violation of state statutes to a constitutional dimension...
Not all violations of state statutes. We're looking at a very limited set of circumstances here.
If this court were to hold that it was only when the General Assembly decides not to create a remedy that this court can constitutionalize a violation of a state statute, I think that also usurps the General Assembly's function. They have the choice of whether to apply a remedy or not.
The General Assembly set out the authority of a police officer in a township for our state. And if that officer acts contrary to that authority and stops someone incorrectly, and searches the vehicle, why wouldn't the search be the fruit of the improper action?
Well, the Supreme Court...
It seems like we've been down this road before. We all sort of know we don't let people just pull you over and start going through your pockets.
Sure.
We don't do that.
I think this court has recognized, and the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized in Fourth Amendment search and seizure case law generally, that the focus is on whether the officer had probable cause to conduct the search or reasonable suspicion to effectuate the stop. It's undisputed
here. This officer didn't have authority to stop that vehicle for driving on the fog line.
Well,
you admit that? Your counsel admits that? General Assembly wrote it.
It's undisputed that it was a violation of this balancing of police powers statute, but it is not an issue to decide that the officer had reasonable suspicion having witnessed
the
individual.
So the fruit of that poisonous tree is okay?
I don't think it's a...
We can use that for a felony conviction.
Well, I don't think there's a constitutional violation when an officer, as this court held in Mays, in this under the exact statute that was violated, the crossing over the fog line statute, this court held that all it takes for an officer to have reasonable suspicion to pull over a vehicle is to witness the actual act of crossing over that line. Indeed, defense counsel here at pages 4 and 5
Mays wasn't a township officer on a state highway.
Mays was not on a state highway, that's correct, but if you look at this court's decisions in Kettering, Mays, and Weidman together, along with the court's recognition for 90 years that the provisions are coextensive, the text, the history, and certainly good policy reasons why you'd want to have them read together. For example, not only clear rules that are important to officers when they're conducting these heat-of-the-moment decision-making processes in search and seizures, but also the increasing prevalence of federal, state, and local multi-jurisdictional task forces. In 2013, for example, there were 9,481 new cases conducted by a multi-jurisdictional task force, yet officers don't know when they're conducting these searches and seizures and those task forces whether they're going to result in a state or a federal prosecution.
So would we have to overrule Brown? Where Brown said Ohio gives more protection to individuals in warrantless traffic situations or minor misdemeanors such as this. Marked lane violation, and you've got this officer then stopping and searching and the felony drugs then being suppressed by the 6th District on that basis.
So a number of distinctions. One, Brown is the outlier, and this court has recognized that. It has never since Brown applied it, expanded it beyond its limited facts of a minor misdemeanor
arrest. We noted it in Smith.
It was noted in Smith, but in Hoffman, this court reaffirmed the general proposition that the Section 14 is coextensive with the Fourth Amendment. It was raised by the defense in their briefs in Mays. It was raised in Bowling Green, in a number of this court's cases in Jordan, and the court has never decided to expand it beyond its holding. And I think that's because of the general proposition that has guided this court for 90 years, that they are coextensive based on their text, their history, and the policy reasons I discussed that are also located in our brief.
Help me understand why I don't want to follow Robinette in this case.
Well, I think Robinette sets out the general rule that they should be harmonized, recognizing their textual and historical reasons for doing so, except for when there are persuasive reasons. And I think that this court's decision in Brown shows when those persuasive reasons exist, and they're not in this case. They only really exist when this court has decided an issue of search and seizure jurisprudence. The Supreme Court then perhaps disagrees with that, and this court thinks that this court interpreted the Fourth Amendment's search and seizure ruling and under Section 14 better than the U.S. Supreme Court did. So that's the only time this court has ever departed from the general proposition that the importance of clarity for officers trumps having Section 14 depart. In fact, this court recognized that in Murrell. It went back and overruled a prior decision of this court involving searching a container simply because the U.S. Supreme Court had departed and it recognized the value of harmonizing this court's decisions with the United States Supreme Court for officer clarity. Thank you for the additional time.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Gold.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Larry Gold. I'm here on behalf of Terrence Brown, appellee. This case was decided on its facts, and the facts were very specific in this case. It builds on Brown and it builds on Jones. The facts in this case are that this was an extraterritorial officer that was on the medium. She pulled out to go after another car initially, and then she saw Terrence Brown. What she stated, and I was there for the suppression hearing in this case, what she stated was that he crossed over the right side of the highway, both tires, for about 100 feet. She indicated in the suppression hearing that she actually went back to check the distance. He was not weaving. There was no issue with regard to driving with his lights off. There was no accident. What happened was, and he was not speeding at all. I did the simple math in this case, and it would appear, based on how many feet he was traveling, if in fact he was going 65 miles an hour.
Counsel, you don't actually contest the probable cause for the initial stop, do you?
No, I don't. In the Sixth District, with regard to the Fourth Amendment.
I mean, that's not why we're here today.
No, we're here today because it's, again, a very narrow issue. And as I was just about to finish, he crossed over the line for what would have been about 1 second, based on the math here. It wasn't very much of an offense here. I would also just correct...
So you're eliminating the imminent danger justification.
Correct. And the Sixth District put that in their opinion with regard to exigent circumstances. The other cases that are cited, these cases included accidents that had occurred. There was an OVI case, the Wiedemann case in particular. That was not crossing over the fog line. That was crossing over the center line. And that was an OVI case. So these are cases that certainly present great danger to the public, and officers that witness this, they're certainly not circumvented from making the stop, and I don't think the Sixth District decision says that at all. The Sixth District decision is strictly based on the facts of this particular case.
In this particular case, there was an active warrant out for your client, right?
I'm sorry, please?
Was there an active warrant for your client?
No, there wasn't. He did have a suspended license, but certainly the officer wouldn't have been aware of that.
Okay, suspended license, and that's why he was extra careful driving. Is that what he testified
his,
to?
His statement was that he knew he had drugs in the car, so that he was driving. He did testify at the suppression.
How about with that other cases where they knew they had drugs in the car and they just drove like a...
Well, and it was... Quite frankly, Justice, it was very interesting because the officer, after she apparently had observed him crossing over the Mark Lanes violation, she pulled up next to him, and you can see this in the transcript. He's looking straight ahead. It's almost as if that would be a criminal indicator. I think most of us tend to look straight ahead when we're driving, perhaps a quick glance to the side. But then she went behind him and actually pulled him over when there was an opportunity to do so. What she also indicated during suppression as well is that she doesn't make stops in every case like this. So it would tend to make you question, well, what was the purpose? I'm not suggesting...
Well, she's not allowed to make stops like this.
Correct.
So that would probably dictate why she doesn't make too many stops.
Correct.
Violation of the statute.
And there's no indication that she was unaware of the statute, quite frankly, and I put this in my brief, it sounded like business as usual. I've argued several of these cases with the Sixth District before. I've argued a Jones case in 2010. I've argued a Caldwell case also in 2010. These were issues where officers had probable cause and there were extenuating circumstances in each of those cases. In the Caldwell case, for example, there was a high-speed police chase after the officer made the initial stop. That pretty much threw everything out the window with regard to any issue that might have occurred with regard to this jurisdictional statute.
But counsel, with each of those, what you seem to be suggesting, though, is that we do need to engage in this balancing test, the Wiedemann balancing test. And didn't the U.S. Supreme Court overturn that test in Virginia versus Moore, which this court then adopted in State v. Jones? So have we not moved away from the balancing test through Jones?
The issue in this tends to be states' rights, whether in fact we have more authority in this state.
Well, I want to keep it, rather than on states' rights for a moment, on our precedent. And didn't we, in State versus Jones, essentially say, we're not going to do the balancing test?
Well, that was you're referring to the 2009 case. That's correct, but that did not address Article 1, Section 14. That strictly addressed the Fourth Amendment. So it is a little bit different with regard to this particular decision. So again, it is a very fact-specific analysis that took place in this case. And again, what I would suggest is that the officer, there's no indication that she was not aware of the law. It came out in suppression that she served on the force for 11 years. The other cases that I was referring to, the 2010 Jones, the 2010 Caldwell, these were township officers as well. So if it seems as if it's a slow day in the township, get out on the highway, and the record doesn't support particularly profiling occurring in this case, but it would lend itself to question what exactly caused her to make the stop, if in fact she doesn't make stops in every case. And that was her testimony at the suppression hearing.
Mr. Gold, are you suggesting that this is not a matter for us to write on, that this case should be improvidently allowed?
I'm sorry, please.
Are you suggesting that this is just a matter of application of law by the Sixth District and that we should not write anything?
I believe it is, and I believe that they followed the law in this with regard to the decision. The law is very straightforward, and I can't help but think that to have extraterritorial officers on the freeway, I'm not sure how that serves the township that actually pays their salaries. There's an indication actually in the Holbert dissent, which is an older case, that's a 1974 case that dealt with this jurisdictional issue, and there's an indication in that case that it provides money for the township.
Well, counsel, not to go outside the record, but since we were discussing Lindale before,
yes,
possibly sir. This is the way they do pay their salaries.
Judge, that certainly could be the case. That could be the case, Your Honor, and I'm not going to dispute that. I don't know that for a fact, but obviously there's compensation that occurs for whatever is brought back to the township.
My guess is there's a lot more crime going on out in 280 than there is in the township.
There could be, Your Honor, and since we are a bit outside the record, I would indicate I did a little bit of research on the township. The township has about 15,000 people in it. There's a police force, and my information was from, I believe it was about 2012 was the most recent I could find. It was 26 officers at that time. I'm not sure whether that has increased or decreased. Well, assuming that they have shifts on and off, I'm not sure if all 26 would be certainly working at the same time. But again, that was information that I was able to find out with regard to the township. If there are no other questions, thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Your Honor, defense counsel is identifying, first off, he indicated that State versus Wiedemann was an OVI case. Well, State versus Wiedemann was a traffic stop case, and it was only an OVI case after the police officer stopped the individual and determined that the person was under the influence, as opposed to looking for their cell phone or something like that. When he indicated that the local cases that he argued, State versus Caldwell and State versus Jones, the Sixth District determined both of those on very similar grounds to this. Yes, they were both township police officers who had either made or attempted to make a stop on the interstate. In State versus Caldwell, the person took off after the police officer stopped them. But the Sixth District indicated that under the Fourth Amendment, the stop was appropriate, which is why the police chase thereafter was valid. In State versus Jones, it's almost the exact same scenario as what you have here. In fact, the police officer even pulled the person over for crossing over the fog line. And the court held in that it was not going to extend the Article 1, Section 14 beyond the Fourth Amendment, and that it was just a violation of a statute. It was a statutory violation and not a constitutional one in that case. The Jones case in 2009, it was said that that the Jones case only discussed the Fourth Amendment. However, at the same time, as Justice French, you indicated, the defense requested that the court engage in that balancing test that was created in kind of that 2000 State versus Jones case, and this court refused to extend that into that case, and instead said Virginia v. Moore answers this question. So the court, having said that initially, said Virginia v. Moore answers the question of the Fourth Amendment, and we reject the offer to extend the balancing test, seems to say that since you had already said Virginia v. Moore covers the Fourth Amendment, that you were not going to extend that State versus Brown balancing test under the Ohio Constitution.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement, gentlemen, and you will be notified of our request. Marshal, will you call a recess?